Pretty crazy world we live in, don't you think? The former president of the United States is about to surrender after being indicted on 38 counts. This is the first time in history anything like that has happened. Meanwhile, the left isn't satisfied with just that. They're going after DeSantis like you would not believe right now. It happened again at the Tony Awards just last night. We'll talk about that. Plus, Austin Killips. Get used to that name because he's winning all the bike races, or rather, they is winning all the bike races. You want to talk by a country mile? This was by 5 minutes down in North Carolina. I'll show you the tape. Fox News seems to be getting rather desperate here as Tucker Carlson continues to make appearances over there on Twitter. They're now threatening to sue, but I'll tell you, in this strange world in which we live, guess what? Tucker Carlson and Lina Khan over at the FTC, that would be Joe Biden's Federal Trade Commission, they're actually in sync on this one because she's not a fan of those non-competes. Plus, this is just great. We are now learning from a whistleblower who's got quite a stellar reputation within the intelligence community that apparently the government's been holding out. Apparently, they've had some kind of operation, super secret, going on for many, many years, looking into aliens that have visited Earth. Apparently, quite a few, according to David Grush. I'm going to play an excerpt from his interview, and we will be talking to the former head, current professor there at Harvard University, former head of the astrophysics department at Harvard, Professor Avi Loeb, who he himself very much adamantly believes that there is extraterrestrial life out there. So we'll see what he has to say about the intel community's person that's come forward here, David Grush. Now, I should point out that the Pentagon, the U.S. government, is vehemently denying all of this. It's good to have you here. Welcome back to the program. I am Trish Regan. Portions of today's program are brought to you by Legacy Precious Metals. If you're interested in investing in gold, you know, you can call them or you can go straight to the website. You can buy and sell gold online there at legacypminvestments.com or call 1-866-589-0560. All right, let's start first here with Donald Trump. As I said, historic, crazy world, banana republic-esque sometimes, I'm beginning to think. The former president of the United States, of course, as you know, has been indicted. 38 counts here. He's going to be going into Miami tomorrow to surrender. And again, in this strange world in which we live, the lawyers originally representing him, they're not going to be there because they quit the other day just as soon as the indictment came out. Also, interestingly, his former lawyer, a guy by the name of Evan Corcoran, well, a lot of the conversations that Trump had with this former lawyer who had been representing him on these boxes that had been discovered that were found at Mar-a-Lago, well, his conversations are now actually part of the government's record, and those conversations will be used against Donald Trump in a kind of unlikely turn of legal events. You see, normally you have what's called attorney-client privilege, but not in this case. Somehow that got wiped out, because this was considered special enough. He is being charged, as I have told you, on espionage and a whole slew of other things. A lot of people have pointed out, gee, it kind of feels a little bit unfair, only in that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and she kept a server right there in her house, but somehow, no big deal. Nobody seemed to care quite as much about that. I mean, they cared, sort of. I mean, Comey kind of gave a half, you know what, answer to why he wasn't moving forward with prosecution, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that she was running for office. So in this case, you also have Donald Trump, who's running for office, who's way out in front for Republicans right now, likely the Republican nominee, and yet they will move forward. The Biden Justice Department, DOJ, will move forward with this case. It's all very surreal, and I'm not making any excuses for him. You know, Pence, when they came to him and he said, gee, I think I got some stuff here. Let me turn it over. Even Biden, even though he had it in his garage with his Corvette, as he so often liked to say, right next to the Corvette, with his Corvette in the locked garage, because somehow the Corvette was really, really important. Therefore, all the super classified documents should be stored with the Corvette. Anyway, Joe Biden did actually turn them over. Donald Trump dug in his heels, and now apparently it's coming back to haunt him. But in really strange ways, like I said, the fact that they're using the attorney-client privilege against him, this will be very interesting to see. I just think it's disappointing for the country, of course. Disappointing because increasingly we feel like that banana republic that we always thought we weren't. And here's the thing. Before you say, oh, well, it's Trump. It's because it's Donald Trump. And I know that's very easy for a lot of people to say. I do at least want to point out that, you know what? The left attacks the Republicans over and over and over again. They attack conservatives. They have historically accused them of being all kinds of things, certainly phobic when it comes to everything, whether it's, you know, you're homophobic or gender phobic or transphobic or whatever. You're discriminatory in pretty much every category they can get in. And that's just a constant theme that the left exploits over and over again in every political cycle. And don't think that this is just about Trump, because consider what they are doing now to Ron DeSantis. The Tony Awards, if you like Broadway musicals, those were last night. And one of the singers got up there and gave a little spiel about how somehow Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, the guy who would be the Republican nominee, most likely, if Donald Trump doesn't see it through, she went on the attack accusing him of being somehow a grand wizard in the KKK. I mean, this is frightening stuff, guys. Listen.
And while I am certain that the current grand wizard, governor of my home state of Florida will be changing.
You see how they're all just so excited. They're all clapping and throwing their arms up and cheering her on as she refers to the governor of Florida, the guy who would win if Donald Trump doesn't get the nomination. So possibly the Republican nominee is the grand wizard. And then she went on to say, oh, I'm sure he's going to change the name of my town in Florida very soon. It happened to be Plantation, Florida, that she was referring to. And it's all so orchestrated. It's like they have a series of talking points. And it's like, okay, we're going to go after Trump. And when in doubt, go after DeSantis. Because you got to cover your bases now. And you got to make sure that everybody knows those Republicans are just terrible. There's also a story that came out today that's just devastating about people holding Nazi flags and paraphernalia in support, allegedly, of Ron DeSantis outside of Disney, sort of taking the Ron DeSantis view of the whole Disney-DeSantis dispute. And I would just say, listen, let's question that a little bit. Let's see whether or not that was just a political dirty stunt, because it's awfully convenient, right? It fits with this whole narrative that they want to keep pushing. And I think the problem for the right is they have not been able, for years now, to be able to get in front of the narrative, a narrative that's really pretty disturbing, because the kinds of accusations that continually get made suggest that, you know, you've got half the country that is just quite awful, frankly. I mean, there's like nothing worse than you can possibly say about people, and yet they keep doing it over and over and over again. And they're doing it when it comes to the whole trans issue. Now, I find it kind of interesting, because if you look at the Tony Awards, well, typically they've always had like best actor, best actress, right? And that's what they have, like, for all these award shows. Not that I ever watch them. You look at the ratings for these things, they have been plunging. I've never been into them, ever. It's kind of just, you know, let's put ourselves up on this big pedestal and talk to ourselves, and maybe they hope somebody's tuning in, but increasingly we've seen people just don't care. So they're talking about how bad Ron DeSantis is. They're talking about the trans. They've got two people that won in categories for actor, but isn't actor actually masculine? Like, if we really want to dig down deep into this, like, how can you be trans and actually get best actor? I'm just curious. Like, look, on the acting front, it's really not that big a deal. If you are a pianist or a violinist or a classically trained singer, you would compete in competitions against not just people of your gender, but, you know, men and women, right? And I don't really have a problem with that. But when you start talking about sports, it actually gets really different. So I just think it's interesting that Hollywood has such this, you know, okay, we got to like embrace the whole trans thing. And yet they have those separate categories for best actor, best actress, you name it. Anyway, we don't, I guess, have the separate categories quite anymore when it comes to sports. Because Austin Killips, get used to that name, just trounced all the women in a race over the weekend. I want you to see this.
Right, Asheville champion in the house. It's Austin.
Yeah, 5 minutes later, the second place biologically born female comes across the finish line. I'm just saying, it doesn't feel very fair. It doesn't feel very fair to the biologically born women that have a whole different biological makeup when somebody born male, having gone through formative years as a male with all the testosterone that goes with that, including the muscle building that comes from the testosterone, actually
champion in the house. It's
if you care about women, if you care about the equality of women, if you care about women's sports, that's got to make you a little angry. But not the big guy. No, because he's all about making sure that anybody who feels like they're a man can compete against women in sports or anything else.
You know, when families across the country face excruciating decisions to relocate to a different state to protect their child from dangerous anti-LGBTQ laws, we have to act. We have to act as a nation. We need to push back against the hundreds of callous and cynical bills and laws introduced in states targeting transgender children, terrifying families, and criminalizing doctors and nurses. These bills and laws attack the most basic values and freedoms we have as Americans. That's not hyperbole. That's a fact.
There's quite a ways.
The right to be yourself. The right to make your own health decisions. The right to raise your own children. I recognize for a lot of...
Really? The right to raise your own children. The right to protect your own decisions. I mean, the right for equality. Again, I go back to, how is this fair when a biologically born man crosses the finish line 5 minutes ahead of the biologically born...
Asheville champion in the house. It's
Austin!
So when Joe Biden wants to go on and on about all this discrimination, I would say, don't you care at all about the biologically born females? And when you talk about how parents should have a say, well, of course parents should have a say. The problem is parents haven't had enough information to really have a say because the medical community and the educational community has been very much stacked against them. Look, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. You saw what Target was doing, and I'm sorry, like they've had the pride display and, you know, everybody was fine with the rainbow onesies. They've had it for years. Nobody complained. But, you know, when you suddenly start putting in swimsuits with tuck-it mechanisms so that biologically born men can go around in girls' swimsuits, well, then it just starts getting a little weird, right? Very weird. When Bud Light suddenly wants to give up its number one spot as a beer because it thinks somehow, miraculously, it's going to bring in all these trans people to drink their beer. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's like 0.06% of the population. It's not going to be a big market for you guys, but somehow they think that that's the answer to everything. What you have is a situation where ESG, you know this, environmental social governance, is affecting the business decisions of actually publicly traded companies who, by the way, have a duty to their shareholders to maximize their profits and grow their businesses. But that's not what's happening, no. Because you see, you have these ESG implants that go into these companies and they have their agendas. And by the way, the agendas work with a lot of the investing community as well. Because what do you think BlackRock is? And some of these other very large institutions which are putting money to work in all of these places. And by the way, putting money to work based on whether or not they have a high enough ESG or DEI score. So the corruption effectively becomes rather rampant. And is going to increasingly be a problem. I mean, the good news is consumers, they get it. We got it. We recognize the problem. We're not shopping at Target anymore. It's why Target stock is just going down. It's off the ledge here. I mean, you think about this stock that was actually at $160 before the whole scandal erupted. And granted, they have other problems. They've got tons of theft that they have not been able to manage. They've got very messy aisles. We heard from the former vice chairman here on the program just the other day. Jerry Storch was talking about that. Very messy aisles. They have things that they never ran in terms of specials before, showing perhaps their desperation as they try to get more of that audience share from Walmart. Walmart, who has had much stronger sales in this environment. And then you factor in all of this because they have somebody in their marketing department that happened to have been, this was Carlos Saavedra, who's the head of the brand marketing department there at the company. And apparently he's on an LGBTQ board and clearly had a little bit of an agenda. I mean, what I don't get is why nobody told the company's CEO, or maybe they did, that this was going to be happening. This would be Brian Cornell, who has done a pretty good job historically running Target, and it's been a pretty successful company. Just recently, it's sort of fallen out of bed, and I wonder how much that has to do, as I said, with the embeds, right? They've got people planted in these companies that have very woke social agendas. Now, nothing wrong with that. You know what? You go do your thing. But when it starts interfering in a company's stock price, when it starts interfering in how that company is able to succeed on behalf of its investors, then we suddenly have a problem. Do we not? And that's exactly what you saw happen over at Bud Light. Another Sanford Bernstein is another Wall Street research firm, another analyst coming out and saying, look, this company's got real problems. Because I don't know as Bud Light is ever really fully going to be able to recover. It will always forever be known as that Dylan Mulvaney beer. And the problem for Bud Light is that its audience share or its consumer share has always historically been in some pretty conservative places and conservative states. This was part of that research report that came out today. And they're like, look, they just clearly didn't get their customer. And what is the expression? The customer's always right. I mean, you want to change the world, but you're not going to be able to do it one Target customer, one Target mom at a time who says, what is this binder thing you want to put on my daughter? I don't think so. Right? Why are they only going after kids? It's a question I have. I was recently online and I was looking for some kids' pajamas and I went to a website that will remain nameless. I went to this website, a clothing brand, and they had women's, they had men's, and they had kids. And then when you go to kids, you see like boys wearing girls' nightclothes. And I'm perplexed because if I go to women to buy some nightclothes for women, then I'm going to see women wearing women's nightclothes for the most part. And men are going to see this. So why are we doing this to kids who are so incredibly impressionable? Like, why is it that you don't do it to me, but you're going to do it to kids? I find it odd, extremely strange. Tucker Carlson has a few things to say about this as well. I mean, he's taking it further and he's citing the Wall Street Journal report that recently came out that was highly critical of some of the tactics that Instagram was using. Take a listen.
Yesterday, when the Wall Street Journal ran a long expose about kiddie porn on Instagram, the journal found, quote, helps connect and promote a vast network of accounts openly devoted to the commission and purchase of underage sex content. Instagram connects pedophiles and connects them to content sellers of child pornography.
Wow. So that's quite an accusation, certainly from the Wall Street Journal. And of course, Tucker highlighting it. He's getting a lot of traction there, which brings me to my next story. And that's that Fox News is apparently trying to sue Tucker Carlson, or at least make his life awfully difficult from a legal perspective, because he's on air over on Twitter. And they say that's a violation of the non-compete. You see, they get them locked up through, I believe, the end of 2024. And the thinking is, well, you're ours. And we make the decision whether or not you are going to be on the air. That's how so many of these network contracts work. And I'm kind of smiling to myself as I think about this, because what's amazing this time around, and I've always said these contracts are frankly kind of bogus. It's just that sometimes when there's a lot of money at stake, people don't necessarily want to fight them. It's been reported that Tucker's being paid some $20 million by Fox? Well, he's probably been paid that kind of money for a long time, so I'm sure he's sitting pretty. Hopefully he just doesn't care. But he should. He should from a legal standpoint, because it's not right to have a kind of non-compete when, in fact, if you listen to what he's saying and his lawyer is saying, Fox was in violation of that because they made a series of promises to him that they, in fact, did not keep. So he and his lawyer are effectively alleging fraud on that front. I find it very interesting only because the FTC, which is run by a woman named Lina Khan, whom I kind of like, I got to tell you, this woman has called out Amazon for being a monopoly in a very new and innovative way. Her thesis on Amazon is that, you know, it's controlling all these channels. But typically, when you think about a monopoly, you only label a company a monopoly if, in fact, it's hurting the customer in that the customer is having to pay a higher price, et cetera. But she's like, no, 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 we need to think about monopoly differently. And she's also taking on these contracts, these non-competes that companies have that keep you out of the workforce, saying effectively that they're not legal. She said that like last January. So I'll tell you, politics can make some strange bedfellows, can it not? In this case, I think you're going to have a bit of an alignment between the Biden administration, certainly the FTC, and Tucker Carlson, because he's going to continue to fight this and say that no, the non-compete is actually not legal. And I think he's going to have some ground to stand on. It'll be kind of fun to watch. All right, you know what else is sort of fun to watch and interesting to watch is this whole issue with aliens. Can you believe we're talking about that? I can. I mean, I think it's just, it's fun to think about. It's interesting to think about. It's sort of wild to think about, of course. But there's some new information that's recently been coming to us that suggests, you know, it may not be quite as out there as some people have often thought. Or, hey, maybe it is. You know what? I'm not an expert in this field, so I'm going to be talking momentarily to an actual expert. That would be Professor Avi Loeb, who is was head of the astrophysics department for nearly 20 years at Harvard University. He's the founder of the Galileo Project. He's the author of the brand new book, Interstellar, which is coming out in August. He's written other books. I've interviewed him in the past. He believes that there is extraterrestrial life out there. And he's on a mission. In fact, he's on a mission this summer to try and find some of this space trash that might exist right here on Earth. His thinking is that, you know, maybe because they'd have to travel billions of years to get here, maybe these are past civilizations and they've sent some kind of robotics to Earth to find out information about us. I think he calls it like GPT 100. Anyway, really interesting. So we're going to get to that in a second. But before we do, the reason we're talking about this is because, yes, there have been all these sightings of UFOs recently. I mean, think about the Chinese spy balloon, right? The question becomes, are they Chinese spy balloons? Are they Russian balloons? What are they really? In some cases, are they something more? Are they from another place, another world? Well, what's fascinating is that the guy who was in charge of what's known as the UAP unit at the Pentagon, in the old days it would have been called the UFO unit, unidentified anomalous phenomenon. That's what a UAP is. Well, his name is David Grush, and he just came out as a whistleblower saying that the government isn't telling us everything, and they're not telling Congress everything. And that, in fact, there's some super, super duper secret unit of our intelligence space that's looking at all of these so-called extraterrestrial things. And just to give you a little bit more about David Grush, that's his name and his background. He's former Air Force. He was a physics major and went into the military. He was an intelligence operative. He worked over in Afghanistan, a whole slew of other places. He was part of the Department of Defense and was running the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. Again, looking at UAPs, unidentified anonymous phenomenon. I mean, really just out there kind of stuff, and yet maybe not entirely. I want to play you an excerpt from an interview. This is with News Nation, a new network. News Nation ran this interview. It was conducted by a gentleman who's a former New York Times reporter. This particular gentleman and one other journalist back in 2017 exposed a very, very big story about how the government actually was funding an effort into looking into UFOs. And so these are two pretty serious journalists, award-winning journalists, and they sat down with this gentleman who is now blowing the whistle on this whole thing, and he is considered quite serious within the intelligence community, and so many people have vouched for him. So why would he just do this? Why would it happen now? You got to ask those questions, right? Of course. But everybody's saying, you know, this is actually a real dude. Like, he's a real guy, and he's making some really big accusations. Listen to this clip, exclusive to News Nation, but we're just using a little bit here because I want you to react, and I want Professor Loeb to react. Take a listen.
I thought it was totally nuts, and I thought at first I was being deceived. It was a ruse. People started confiding in me. They approached me. I have plenty of current and former senior intelligence officers that came to me, many of which I knew almost my whole career, that confided in me. They were a part of a program. They named the program. I've never heard of it. And they told me, based on their oral testimony, and they provided me documents and other proof that there was, in fact, a program that the UAP task force was not read into.
If you're telling us the truth, everyone, the entire American public, has been lied to for decades.
Yeah, there's a sophisticated disinformation campaign targeting the U.S. populace, which is extremely unethical and immoral.
You are saying...
Okay, so he goes on to talk about how this has been going on for quite some time and that there's a lot, like more than you'd think. So, you know, maybe if 98% of the stuff is all just a hoax, there's 2% that we can't really explain, except he's actually saying full out that this is alien, not human stuff that's coming here. And then even goes on to say that they've recovered some pilots. What does that mean? Right? What non-human pilots? Well, I think Avi Loeb will be able to shed a little bit more light onto that, because his view is that, you know, these could be little robots that are coming here from even billions of years away. It's kind of heady stuff, so you got to bear with me, but I think it's important to hear from an actual scientist who, by the way, is saying, if this is out there, like, why haven't they alerted the scientific community? I can point to a report that Professor Loeb put out alongside Sean Kirkpatrick, who is at the Pentagon and is looking at unidentified aerial phenomenon. And this is a report that just came out rather recently. This would have been in March of this year, and they teamed up. They teamed up to do this report together. It has not yet been peer-reviewed in the scientific community. But there seems to be this thought that's projected, sort of, you know, half and half from the Pentagon, Sean Kirkpatrick working with Professor Loeb to suggest that, yeah, you know, like maybe this could happen. Well, simultaneously, we still heard, in fact, in a statement to Fox from the Department of Defense that, you know, no. There's no evidence of this. The government's insisting, you know, that they have no evidence of this whatsoever. I think David Grush would tell you, well, it's so undercover that they probably think they're telling the truth. We'll see if Avi Loeb has a similar thing to say. Here we go. Here to make sense of all of this, I am so happy to welcome to the show Professor Avi Loeb from Harvard University. Sir, you are like the guy that one would go to on any of this. I've spoken to you in the past, and I know you have a lot of very firm beliefs, and including that, in fact, we have experienced alien encounters here on Earth already. I want to get to that. And you've got a new book, by the way, coming out. We can talk about that as well. Interstellar, which you can pre-order right now on Amazon, Amazon.com. But Professor Loeb, I mean, this is quite something to hear from somebody in an intelligence capacity, someone who is not underestimated as a source. The reporting by the journalists that covered this, they were the ones who did some pretty meaty reporting back on the whole issue back in 2017 in terms of just letting us know that the government was spending money on this research. What's your reaction?
Well, the Earth is encountering objects from interstellar space. We know that because there is a meteor that was identified in 2014 by U.S. government sensors that, in fact, this summer I'm going to search for in the Pacific Ocean. And we know it for a decade that there was an object collided with Earth roughly half a meter in size and had material strength much tougher than all the space rocks we had seen. So it could be potentially a spacecraft.
Ooh, is it because you didn't recognize the material in the, I mean, why a spacecraft and not a meteor? Or
because the NASA catalog of meteors include 273 objects over the past decade. Mm-hmm. And this one happens to be the first one from interstellar space that was identified by me and my students. We discovered it, yet it's the toughest. It maintained its integrity all the way to the lower atmosphere of the Earth, while other meteors explode much higher in the atmosphere. So they don't have the material strength of this one. That's what makes us suspicious, that it may be made of materials that are not the same as a solar system.
And nobody's actually gotten to get a sample of those materials before.
That's why I'm willing to spend a couple of weeks on a boat where we develop machinery that we will that will allow us to scoop the ocean floor and look for the fragments from this meteor. And we'll bring whatever we find back to Harvard University and then analyze it. And our data will be completely open to the public. And whatever we find, we let people know whether it's made of some unusual material that is natural, or maybe it's stainless steel or some artificial alloy that we've never seen before. So
is that what you're looking for, by the way, in terms of what, specifically in terms of this object on the bottom of the ocean floor in the Pacific, or whether you're using telescopes to try and figure out what else is that? I mean, you're looking for space artifacts that would give you some inkling that this is not from here?
Yeah, so in fact, for 70 years, we've been searching for radio signals and light from extraterrestrial technological civilizations. And that may be the wrong approach, because it's like waiting for a phone call. Nobody may call you. And a better approach might be to go out to your backyard and search for objects that may have been thrown by your neighbors in your direction. And interestingly, the rockets that we launch to space mm-hmm. are moving too slow to escape from the gravitational pull of the Milky Way galaxy. So they will remain bound. You know, they keep accumulating over time in the Milky Way. All the probes that were sent by other civilizations over billions of years keep mm-hmm. adding up, and we could find them in principle, just like you find plastics in the ocean. You know, they keep accumulating over time. So the idea is to search for objects. Now, this week we heard a testimony from David Grush that in fact the government found materials that they are studying that we are not aware of. He didn't provide any material evidence for that. And as a scientist, you know, I only abide by what the evidence or the data looks like and not by testimonies. But he actually testified under oath about this subject. And legally speaking, you know, he is held accountable for what he says. So mm-hmm. it would be interesting to see what the hearings in Congress will unveil. Mm-hmm. This is interesting.
And by the way, just to add to that, you actually have worked with the government. I was reading your paper, which is still under peer review, but the draft of it, Physical Constraints on Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, and you did this in conjunction with the Pentagon with Sean Kirkpatrick over there. I guess this was all based on information that was not classified. So given your experience working with the Pentagon and given what you heard from the intel officer, I hear you. You actually want to see the evidence and see what he's talking about. But does it add up in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah. So in July 2021, I established and I currently lead the Galileo Project, which aims to collect more data on unidentified anomalous objects that the government talks about. The Director of National Intelligence reported to Congress, and as a result, this All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, ARO, was established. And Sean Kirkpatrick is the head of that office. And that is under the Department of Defense. So you have this organization that was established a year after the Galileo Project. The Galileo Project already has a working observatory that is monitoring the sky 24/7. And over the past month, I received the interest from five donors who are willing to fund copies of this observatory that is currently working at Harvard University and put them mm-hmm. in different locations. So the hope is that in the coming year or two, we will have tens of these observatories and get much better data with calibrated instruments that would help us figure out the nature of these unidentified objects. And ARO is aiming to do the same thing based mm-hmm. on reports from the past. So they are analyzing past reports that were completely anecdotal. We are doing a systematic survey, which is much better because we are looking at the entire sky in the infrared, optical, radio, and audio, and using artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms to classify objects, whether they are natural like birds or whether they are human-made like balloons or airplanes, mm-hmm. or maybe it's something else. So we try to figure it out.
So let's get into that something else for a second. Humor me, because, you know, look, there's been a lot of balloon sightings as of late. And I think that a lot of people have just kind of dismissed, unfairly, by the way, and I know you're very passionate about that, and we can talk about that. You know, they've dismissed this as this sort of science fiction stuff, and they roll their eyes when they think about the talk of any extraterrestrial or alien activity. But you've devoted your career to this. You've had this founding, I believe, off the coast of New Guinea, which you're going to. And forgive me on the pronunciation. Is it Oumuamua?
Oh, that's the second object. So the first one is the meteor I mentioned, half a meter in size, that exploded in the Earth's atmosphere, produced a fireball. The government discovered it. The second object was found 4 years later, in October 2017, and it was called Oumuamua. It was found by astronomers, never collided with Earth, was just passing by, much bigger, 200 times bigger, the size of a football field, and was detected as a result of the reflection of sunlight from it, and using a conventional astronomical telescopes. And it appeared weird. It was most likely flat, disc-like, and was mm-hmm. pushed away from the sun by reflecting sunlight. And 3 years later, the same telescope in Hawaii that discovered Oumuamua found another object that was pushed away from the sun by reflecting sunlight without any evaporation, no cometary tail. It was not a comet. And that one, the second one in September 2020, ended up being a rocket booster that NASA launched in 1966. So we know it was artificial because we produced it. NASA produced it. The question is, who produced Oumuamua? So currently we have the two first interstellar objects, this meteor, which was unusual in material strength, and mm-hmm. Oumuamua, which was weird in its shape, and also the fact that it was thin, pushed away from the sun without cometary tail. And so both of them are not familiar, unlike the space rocks that we are familiar with. And the question mm-hmm. is, what are they? And that's what brought me to the subject to establish the Galileo Project. And mm-hmm. we are looking at objects near Earth and objects far away to see if any of them are technological in origin. So then comes Grash and says, there is a secretive program within government, within the Department of Defense, the same organization that established ARO in response to the US Congress. And you ask yourself, how is that possible? So ARO issued a public statement saying, mm-hmm. we don't have any evidence for an extraterrestrial origin of materials, after interviewing a couple of dozen of witnesses. We don't have any evidence for the kind of materials that Grash is talking about. Mm-hmm. And you ask yourself, well, both of them speak about things that the Department of Defense is doing. And one possible way to interpret that is that both of them speak honestly, in the sense that the organization that Grash is speaking about is actually has a higher security clearance. So it's separate and it operates with the private sector, with companies that are looking into materials that were retrieved by the governments over the decades. Whereas ARO is a recent organization that was established in response to Congress, and it's sort of saying what DOD wants it to say, which is basically that the evidence it has access to is not convincing in any way and is not related to anything extraterrestrial.
Right, right. And they just don't have perhaps the clearance levels that maybe Grosch did.
Exactly.
Have you talked to Grosch at all about this? Has he called you up? I mean, you were my first call. I said to the producer, I said, let's see if we can get Professor Loeb to come on and talk about all this, because it seems to me you'd want to go to the source of the guy who's, you know, at the top of this industry and investigating it and devoting his career to this. Have you spoken with him about his findings?
No, I did not speak with him, but I spoke with people who know him extremely well. And in fact, we had a discussion about this entire story within the Galileo Project just an hour ago. And with people who are familiar with some background information. And the point of the matter is that, you know, there is more to be found. He did not have access to the primary sources of evidence. He just is reporting about hearsay, about documents that he may have seen. But that's not a substitute to the actual materials or the evidence. And science cannot be based on eyewitness testimonies. You know, the legal system is based because the legal system deals with interactions between humans. So you have to listen to what humans tell you at the court of law. But in the context of science, I cannot write a paper saying Grosch said this and that. That's not evidence. And what we want to have access to is the actual materials or, you know, so if it exists, I hope the government will eventually release some indications to what it might contain. But
And by the way, just to remind the listeners, if you're tuning in right now, we're talking with Professor Avi Loeb from Harvard University, who is the founder of the Galileo Project and the world expert, basically, on the potential for alien existence. And I believe, sir, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're pretty convinced that they're out there and we just have to find them. And it may have even been billions of years ago, right? Like some of these artifacts that we're finding now could have been sent a long time ago.
Yeah, the thing to keep in mind is that most of the stars formed before the sun by billions of years. Mm-hmm. And our modern science and technology is only one century old. We learned about quantum mechanics, which is used in all of our gadgets on the internet, artificial intelligence, everything uses quantum mechanics. We learned about it just a century ago. And given the fact that other civilizations may have preceded us by billions of years, you know, that gave them a huge advantage technologically relative to us. Mm-hmm. And that may explain why they are visiting us while we haven't visited them.
Do you think that they're still in existence, or do you think that this is, you know, 2 billion years ago and, you know, they're no longer in existence? Perhaps something happened and it's important that we learn and understand that because we want to obviously prevent ourselves from making similar mistakes.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We know for sure that eventually within 1 billion years, 20% of the age of the Earth, the sun will become too hot to allow liquid water on the surface of Earth. So we will basically, through a greenhouse effect, all the liquid water on the surface of Earth will evaporate. So we couldn't stay here. And if other stars reach that point already because they formed billions of years before the sun, then there must have been cries for help from civilizations who were left, you know, on the planet as it burns up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they might have tried to go in an exodus on spaceships, but we were not around billions of years to hear their cries for help. And so it's possible that a lot of technological civilizations perished by now. But it doesn't really matter. If you're looking for packages in your mailbox, the sender may be dead. If you are looking for the sender to call you on the phone, of course, that you know, entity needs to be still active. And that's what we've been doing for 70 years. But it's much better to look for packages that arrive by mail because the sender is not needed.
So you're talking about thinking about it in a different way. I mean, I think, you know, I remember there were 9 planets when I was in school, right, as a little kid. That's what we learned. But, you know, obviously the world's changed a whole lot and we've learned a lot since then and we continue learning every single day. It's amazing. And with the new telescopes and the James Webb telescope, it's just incredible, right? What we are learning every minute, every moment. So it really does expand your world. But in terms of how we approach it from a scientific perspective, do you ever worry like we're doing kind of one and the same, like we're looking for the same stuff? You mentioned we're waiting for that call, right? We're waiting for them to show up. And maybe we need to think about it differently. Do we really need to look for oxygen in water or maybe something else?
No, that's what the astronomy community is trying to do, to look for fingerprints in the atmospheres of other planets. But it may well be that objects near Earth are the best approach. And the reason I say that is because I did a simple calculation. We are spending $2 trillion every year on military budgets. If we were to allocate the same amount of money to space exploration, because we decided to listen to John Lennon, who said, imagine all the people living in peace. And so we decided not to waste our funds on fighting each other, trying to kill each other, trying to protect us from other nations, so forth. If we did that, we could send, by the end of this century, a probe to every star in the Milky Way galaxy, billions of them, tens of billions of them. It's not that expensive. If we can do it by the end of this century using the money we allocate to military budgets, someone else may have done it already. And it takes less than a billion years for chemical rockets of the type that we used, like Voyager, Pioneer, New Horizons. Those will traverse the Milky Way galaxy in less than a billion years. So they could have reached us by now if they did it more than a billion years ago. And the question is, are they around? And we haven't searched. You see, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy to say we need extraordinary evidence without seeking the evidence. That's what the scientific community was doing until now. The Galileo Project is the first scientific project that is actually trying to search for such evidence. And the reason I decided to go in this direction is because the first interstellar objects, two of them, the meteor and Oumuamua, didn't look familiar.
Wow. So what do you think is out there? What sort of your gut tell you? What compels you to keep doing this work? What do you think we don't know?
There is a lot that we don't know. We don't know what most of the matter in the universe is. We call it dark matter simply because we don't see it. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the vacuum that fills up the universe is made of. We call it dark energy because we don't understand it. We don't know what happened before the Big Bang, what created our universe. And we don't know when life started in the universe. And we don't know what's inside black holes, what happens in the centers of black holes when we throw materials into them. So there is a lot that we don't know. And obviously, if we find a smarter kid in our cosmic block, we could ask them. But what I'm trying to say is that there is a lot to be learned, and we can learn it by studying what other civilizations may have learned. And so it actually is worth checking if there is any visitor in our backyard. And in my last class at Harvard, I asked the students, suppose we find a gadget and it has buttons on it, would you press a button? So half of my class said, no way. I'm worried about the consequences of what will happen to society, what will happen to my body if I press a button and it happens to create a catastrophe. And the other half of the class said, actually, I'm very curious to see what happens. Maybe it's GPT-100 and it will give me an answer to an important question. And then one of the students asked me, what would I do? And I said, well, I'll just bring it to a laboratory and study it as if it was an intelligent creature that went through a trauma. And before I engage with it physically, I want to understand it, to figure out what it's made of. So, you know, there is a possibility that we'll go to the Pacific Ocean and find a gadget. I promised the Museum of Modern Art in New York City that I'll bring it for display in that case, because it will represent modernity for humanity.
When are you actually going? I know that's happening this summer.
Yes.
So you'll be there like July, August, and do you anticipate having any answers in any, you know, how long does it take to actually analyze everything and get a sense of whether this is recognizable stuff or not?
In July and August, we will indeed analyze it. I will be there before. And then I have a regular column on medium.com. If you just put Avi Loeb, medium.com, you can find it, and I'll maintain a diary of the expedition so you can follow what happens.
It's so you'll update
quite
it.
Exciting.
It sounds very exciting. And of course, you've got the new book coming out, and it sounds like what you're telling us in terms of what Grush said was there may be some there. And if there is some there, hey, you want to know about it, right? Because the scientific community should be included, and it's for the betterment, hopefully, of our whole society. Do you think that there's fear? I mean, why wouldn't we know more? Why wouldn't you as a scientist know more? Is there, if this is true, just fear of this information getting out? Fear about competitors? Fear about, you know, how is the public going to interpret this?
Well, we tend to think that we are at the center of the universe, that we are physically at the center. That was the initial belief. And then Copernicus and Galileo realized the Earth is moving around the sun. That was a shock. The church put Galileo in house arrest, but eventually admitted that they were wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay. We now see it from a distance. We can see the Earth moving around the sun from a distant spacecraft. Mm-hmm. So we know it's true. And we are not at the center of the stage. The other thing we know is that Homo sapiens that predated us, you know, they emerged about a few million years ago. And that's, you know, thousands of times shorter than the age of Earth or the age of the universe, you know.
Sure.
And, so we know that we came only at the end of the cosmic play and that we are not at the center of stage. So it's quite simple. If you arrive at the play, you are not at the center of the stage, and you arrive just at the end of the play is not about you. Okay, so that's the message. I call it cosmic modesty. We are supposed to be modest in the sense of admitting we are not necessarily the smartest. And guess what? GPT-5 might be potentially.
Okay, so all right, this is very interesting because so we've been talking a lot about GPT, and GPT is amazing. And a lot of what I'm reading suggests that, you know, hey, you got to be careful here because GPT could take over the world. And you've referred to it now several times, artificial intelligence. I mean, explain to me what you mean. Like, you're talking about a gadget and you want to understand the gadget. So the gadget's not a living thing. It's a form of artificial intelligence created by, theoretically, people maybe like us, right? I don't know. But where are you going with it? Because it's like, I'll tell you a funny story. I had an author on the program recently who was a former, actually, he got a PhD in AI, like back in the 70s, before anybody, he said, was really interested in AI, and wound up becoming a very, very successful entrepreneur and computer programmer. He said, I've written enough code. I want to give back. I'm writing these fiction novels, science fiction novels. This was a while, you know, he was writing these a couple of years ago, and it's the storyline is that the AIs are taking over the world effectively. And fast forward to today, and, you know, kind of here we are. When you say AI or GPT-5, like what exactly do you mean?
Yeah, very simply, when we find a civilization that produced products that are far more advanced than we can right now, it will give us a glimpse at our future. Okay, so that can do two things. First of all, those civilizations that arrive to us are the more successful ones. There must have been a lot that were not that successful. Mm-hmm. They were not as smart. They did not promote their longevity as much. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we would not see them. So there is a selection here. And the hope is that we can learn from that because it will inspire us. It will tell us something about what our future could be like. First, we will see something that is unfamiliar. Just, you know, like cave dwellers going to New York City, they won't be able to understand what's going on there, you know, and that is just a separation by maybe 10,000 years, okay, in human history between cave dwellers and where we are right now. So just imagine ancient people visiting us now, they would look at us and think that we are, you know, in contact with miraculous gadgets, and they would be at awe, you know, sort of like religious awe. So I would say finding those things could potentially unify religion with science, because religion was talking about miracles And just think about Moses, okay? In the biblical story, he saw a burning bush, which was supposed to be a miracle that convinces him to believe in God. And Moses looked at it and said, wow, that's remarkable. But if the Galileo Project existed at Moses' times, we could have put infrared sensors around the burning bush, measure the surface temperature of the burning bush, measure the distance to the burning bush and the amount of energy that it produces per unit time, and advise Moses whether this is a natural bush that is burning unusually well, or maybe it was produced by a superhuman entity. Okay, so we could use science to advise Moses whether this is a miracle from our vantage point, because this is a technology that we don't recognize. What I'm trying to say is a very advanced scientific civilization is a good approximation to God.
Very true. I guess where I'm going is, does that civilization eventually become sort of all machine based? I mean, I've seen some accounts, you know, that, and I think in some of your writing, you've talked about the dandelions, right? And effectively like little bots. I'm not saying this in any correct science term, that are out there gathering information,
right?
And not people, not, you know, flesh and blood.
The reason is simple, because we developed on Earth by natural selection, and we are used to the conditions on the surface of this rock that has an atmosphere, has liquid water. Once you put people in space, you know, conditions are so different and hazardous to the human health that I cannot imagine humans exploring interstellar space, because with chemical rockets, it would take us 50,000 years to reach the nearest star. So that's a huge amount of time, and there would be wars on the spacecraft. There are lots of science fiction stories about it. By the way, I don't like science fiction because it often violates the laws of physics. So the journey is so long, and because of the bombardment by cosmic rays and these harsh conditions in space, the darkness and so forth, I don't expect biological creatures to survive such journeys. It makes much more sense to send technological products. And I'm very proud of our technological products in the form of our artificial intelligence, 3D printers. They can go places and replicate themselves, by the way. You can have self-replicating machines, automata, the way that John von Neumann envisioned before the helix, double helix structure of DNA was discovered. And so biology does it. Biology, as you mentioned, there are dandelion seeds sent by a flower, and then they create more flowers like it. So you don't actually need to send billions of probes to space. You can send just a few that will replicate themselves, and then exponentially the population would grow. Just like in biology, you will end up with probes everywhere very quickly. So that's an approach that could have been taken. We just don't know if it's in principle possible that they visited Mars, they visited the Earth. By the way, on Mars, you know, we've been looking at the surface, but the surface, since Mars lost its liquid water, the surface was bombarded by so many asteroids. There were more than 20 times the Hiroshima bomb energy released by asteroids impacting every square kilometer on Mars. So anything on the surface must have been demolished, turned into dust. But there are these caves that are called lava tubes that you find in Hawaii, for example, caused by lava that develops a crust on top, and then you get a tunnel underneath because the lava flows clears it up. So you end up with a cave. What I'm interested in is going to Mars and checking those caves for any markings on the wall that may have been produced by, you know, intelligent creatures over there, because Mars lost its atmosphere only 2 billion years ago at the middle of its life. And if life progressed twice as fast on Mars than it did on Earth, you could have had things like us on Mars before we came on Earth, you know, just a few billion years ago. And in that case, you know, if we see anything that is technological, it could be the products of those creatures. And I think in those lava tubes, you can, in principle, find any relics left behind.
Wow. Have you talked to Elon Musk about this? I mean, how do you do it, right? You've got Harvard University behind you, but I would imagine you got to find some deep pockets to help with this research. Who's most interested in this? Is it a corporate level, government level, individual level?
So far, no government funding, but what happened was I released my book, Extraterrestrial. Now I have a new book called Interstellar coming out in August 2023. So when my book came out, there was a huge amount of interest. It was mostly about Oumuamua. I had 3,000 interviews since then, 2.5 years ago. And
I was one of them, by the way. You probably don't remember me, but I remember you. I was so fascinated with everything you said.
Thank you. And then a lot of wealthy individuals approached me. And that includes also the funding of this expedition. I basically said, we need to go to the Pacific Ocean. We need $1.5 million a couple of months.
Oh, that's not. I mean, that's $1.5 million? And, yeah. And to think what you could find.
Yeah. So a couple of months later, I had a Zoom call where someone said, you have the money.
That's great.
And, so that's the way I was funded so far. And there is a huge amount of interest. And you know, sure. this can be understood because 2/3 of the Americans believe in extraterrestrial intelligence and less than half believe in God. So if you just select randomly people that have money, many of them are really curious about these questions. And now with Grash's testimony, I very much hope that more will fund the scientific inquiry.
And by the way, I don't think that, you know, for those of my listeners that are watching and listening, and we have a lot of people that are very deeply religious, I don't think the two have to be, I heard what you said earlier, and I agree with you. I think that they can work together. I don't think it's, you know, like they're mutually exclusive, but it is.
I should tell you that there were two rabbis that sent me an email after my book came out, and they said that they gave a sermon for the High Holidays about my book. And you ask yourself, why would religious people care about it? And I think there is a common thread between spirituality and the frontiers of science in the sense that you are exploring the unknown. And, you know, I'm always at awe with nature. I don't care how many likes I have on social media. That's irrelevant. So I think that there are greater powers that nature possesses than we appreciate. And that's why we shouldn't pay too much attention to groupthink, to herd mentality, to what other people say on social media. You know, it's much more relevant to listen to nature.
What do you think about all these sightings over the years? And I'll tell you, you've probably heard about incident at Exeter, incident over Exeter. Maybe you heard about Barney and Betty Hill. Quick, funny story. So they were from my hometown in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I grew up. And word had kind of gotten out, actually. Barney and Betty Hill had, they thought, seen what they believed to be an alien encounter, and they got taken up in a spaceship. This would have been in the 60s. And they were concerned about some of the after effects. I guess they had some headaches, and somehow it came up in their Unitarian church group in Massachusetts, and it made its way to a reporter, and the reporter was going to publish the story. And my father, actually, who was a small town lawyer, represented them because they did not want the story in the paper. And so he tried to keep it out. Barney Hill was very worried he was going to lose his job at the post office because everybody was going to think he was crazy. And my father has said, you know, many times, look, it wasn't my job to decide whether they were telling the truth or not. But the truth is, they believe they were telling the truth. And the psychiatrist that worked with them as they tried to unravel all this believe they were telling the truth. I'm just curious, given your scientific approach, all these people that say, you know, I saw something or I had this encounter, what do you make of that?
I make of that we need better evidence, that it's in fact very intriguing. That's why I dedicate most of my time to the search. So I take it very seriously, but to convince the mainstream, those people that didn't witness it, you know, we cannot use hearsay. We have to get photographs. We have to get materials. And if, you know, if the government has that, let us all see it.
Yes.
If not, let us get it ourselves. And, you know, I think it will change the way we think about our future, and maybe it will bring us together, because we would realize that it makes little sense for us to feel superior relative to each other. You know, like we are all equal members of the human species. There is someone better than us might be out there, and we can learn from them. And so I think, you know, that would could be one thing that will save humanity, because we keep fighting with each other on, you know, things that are not particularly important in the big scheme of things. When you look at the universe, it's so big, the time is so long, that what we care about on the surface of this rock that we were born on is really not, you know, should not be our main focus.
Well, that for sure is true. For sure is true. And there's so much out there. And I'm blown away talking to you. I appreciate your time. I encourage people to go check out the book, Interstellar. It's coming out in August, but you can get it now on Amazon. And the blog as well on, you said medium.com, you're going to be blogging from the site.
Yeah.
As you try and uncover these artifacts. It's just amazing. We'd love to talk to you again, Professor Loeb, when you get back.
I will be delighted to speak with you. And everything, I mean, when you speak with me, what you see is what you get. I'm completely open about and transparent about what we find. So in difference from things we hear about the government, where things are hidden behind the veil of secrecy, we're trying to bring fresh air to this discussion and conversation. And you know, by shedding more light on past reports, we would hopefully have a better future, because we will adapt to the reality that we all live. It's sort of learning about the fact that you have neighbors, so then you behave differently.
In other words, it's not just Russia and China out there, which is what I think, you know, a lot of people in the intelligence and, you know, at one level will try and say, okay, like these are just spycraft.
I should tell you, Elon Musk made a comment that at an interview recently where he said that, you know, he's a space guy. He knows everything about space, and he would know if aliens visited us. And
he said that?
He said that. And I listened to that and thought to myself, well, the region that he's aware of is just around the orbit of the Earth around the sun. Okay, so that's the region. It's a quadrillion times smaller than the size of the universe. It's one part in 10 to the power 15 of the size of the universe. So it's sort of like having an ant explore the head of a pin and trying to make a statement about the most distant planet in the solar system. That's the ratio of scales. This would be a very presumptuous ant.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I'm actually surprised he said that, because I kind of would think that he, of all people, would have the humility to understand, given his interest, right, in space, that we're not the be-all, end-all. I've spoken with Richard Branson about this in the past, and he's emphatic that absolutely there's something else out there and wants to understand it better.
I met with Richard on his island just a couple of months ago, and yes, indeed, he was very fascinated. I gave a lecture about my research, and I do think that everyone cares about this subject.
I mean, unless Elon's just thinking about his space tourism, right? He's like, nobody's going to want to go to Mars if they think there's other people up there.
All I'm saying is that there must be a lot of entrepreneurs on other habitable planets out there. Maybe, you know, there were millions of them like Elon Musk that explored space. That's all I'm saying. He sent Tesla, the car that he owned, he sent it to space. Okay, so, you know, there must be a lot of Teslas from other civilizations out there. That's all I'm saying. So,
and you want to find them.
You should feel happy about it, because
what does it really cost? Like, I hear you. You should be happy, because like, it's some reassurance. But you never know. You know, big egos. They don't want it. Other Teslas out there.
All I'm saying, you're not supposed to be an alpha male.
Yeah.
In the universe, that is inappropriate.
What is it cost, really? Like, I mean, I know you mentioned the money we spend on military, and we all know that's not really going to happen anytime soon. But if they devoted a little bit to this, could we make much more progress?
Well, there are two aspects to it. One is the scientific inquiry, the scientific research. And, you know, the biggest science projects cost about $10 billion, like the James Webb Space Telescope, like the Large Hadron Collider. Mm-hmm. For the Galileo project to accomplish its goals of getting good enough statistics about unidentified anomalous objects, we need just 1% of that. At most, $100 million. That's nothing.
No, I think you could get that from 10
now,
from 10 folks.
The second thing is, if you ask yourself, okay, suppose we find something, what would it take us to imitate them? I call it the imitation game, which you know Alan Turing invented about 90 years ago in the context of AI imitating humans. The way I see the imitation game is more about us humans imitating AIs that came from extraterrestrials. Okay, so if we want to do the same and basically visit other planets, of course, it will take a long time to get there, but at least start the process of sending our packages to their mailboxes. Okay, if we wanted to do that, as I said, we just need to allocate our military budget for several decades until the end of this century. We will be able to send a package to every habitable mailbox within the Milky Way galaxy.
And we haven't gotten to the other galaxies.
That's a separate matter that I wrote a scientific paper about. How far can we go? You know, the universe is not just expanding. It's expanding at an accelerated rate. So in other words, the expansion speed is growing over time. Mm-hmm. And it means that you cannot reach a very far away destination because it runs away from you. Eventually, it will run away from us faster than light.
So it's infinite. Hey, how did you get interested in this? Can I just ask? And I was reading some more about you. One of your proteges actually does attend a school that I used to go to, New England Conservatory. He's doing a double major, I saw, in piano, New England Conservatory in Harvard. And he's quite young. And I just wondered how you got interested in all of this.
Oh, I'm just guided by evidence. There was this object Oumuamua that looked weird. I didn't expect it. And, you know, other people...
But even before, like, for you to have gone into this field looking for something bigger.
That's because I'm behaving like a kid. Basically, something I'm curious, and I'm not pretending to know more than I know. Because when I was a child, the biggest frustration I had was coming to a dinner table and asking a difficult question and seeing all the adults in the room dismissing the question because they didn't know the answer. And that frustrated me. And I must say, I have the same experience now. You know, I ask questions, for example, about Oumuamua, and the people, the scientists who pretend to be the adults in the room, dismiss the question. They say there is a cometary tail that we can't see. It's invisible around Oumuamua. There was a paper just a few months ago in Nature magazine, the most prestigious scientific journal, saying that Oumuamua had an invisible cometary tail around it. I felt like the kid in Hans Christian Andersen's tale who said the emperor has no clothes. The emperor here is Oumuamua. The clothes are the cometary tail. I say what I see. I don't see any cometary tail. The scientific community didn't detect anything. So I say the emperor has no clothes. And everyone around me says, no, you don't understand. The clothes are invisible. They are beautiful. And, you know, I just wonder, why is it that I'm the only one that is able to maintain his childhood curiosity?
Is it ego? You think when you go into the field of science, right? To me, it should all be about discovery, and you should be asking all these questions and using the evidence to guide you and lead you to more questions.
Well, that's in case you really care about nature, reality, trying to understand it and adapt to it. However, what happens in academia very often is you start caring about your ego, yourself. You want to show off. So you use the scientific inquiry as a sandbox to demonstrate how smart you are in order to get honors and awards. Once you do that, you know, then you go in directions that do not necessarily follow curiosity, because all you want to do is create an echo chambers, of students and postdocs that repeat your mantras so that your voice will be heard loud, so that you will receive honors and awards. And if there is something that is risky, you might avoid it because you don't want to risk your reputation. So that's what one of my colleagues said about Oumuamua. He said, Oumuamua is so weird, I wish it never existed.
Wow. Well, that's disappointing because I am with you and I am no scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but it just is natural to want to know more, right? And maybe that's what a journalist has in common with a scientist, because you just want to know more. And
for the religious people, I would say the more we learn about nature, the more we may appreciate, what was created out there. It's just like examining a watch and seeing all the intricate machinery in the watch. It gives you an appreciation of the watchmaker.
I agree with that. And as I said earlier, I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive. I think that it actually tells us more about this incredible universe. It is so good to see you. So I want to talk with you again when you get back. And what I love is even what you just said, I wish maybe, more politicians could apply that to themselves as well in terms of the ego and echo chambers. But even if you find out that, hey, this is stuff that's been around and it's just pretty simple, right? In this, I'm going to call it a dig for lack of a better term, then it's just another piece of information. You could be proven wrong, but that's okay. Right? Because you move on and it's more information that helps formulate a thesis for the future.
Exactly. And I would call it actually a fishing expedition in the case of the meteor. We don't know what kind of fish we will find. Mm-hmm. It's also a treasure hunt. If you think about interstellar trash being our treasure. And, one thing I hope to take with me is a hat of Indiana Jones on this trip, trying to see what we find, because it was depicted in the movies before, a scientific search for something really extraordinary. Let's see if we find an extraordinary evidence here.
Very exciting stuff. Very exciting. Avi Loeb, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Pretty, pretty interesting stuff. Don't you agree? Just a wonderful conversation there with Professor Avi Loeb from Harvard University. And he has devoted his life's work to studying, astrophysics, but also the potential for alien life. So he was the guy I wanted to talk to about David Grush's belief that there is a whole lot that the government is not telling us. And again, I just want to point out that the Defense Department says, no, we don't know anything. We don't have any evidence of extraterrestrial life or parts of planes or, pilots or anything else like that. But it's a huge accusation from somebody who has a very solid reputation within the intelligence community. And that's something that you heard Professor Loeb communicate as well, that David Grush is considered to be a serious player. And clearly, Professor Loeb is a serious player. And he's like, hey, wait a second, like if the government has this, like why don't I not know about it? But if you think about it, I'm sure, and I'm digging down deep here into the rabbit hole, but I would be rather certain that the government community would want to protect whatever information it had only because of international concerns. And as you heard from him, he's more about sharing all this information with the world. And I would think that perhaps they'd want to hang on to it for dear life, right? I'm just reading through some of your comments here. Some of you just tuning in right now, Leonard, if you're just tuning in, we just finished an interview. I had actually spoken with Professor Loeb a little earlier today about the accusations being leveled at our government from a former defense professional, somebody who was with the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or the UAP. He was investigating unidentified anomalous phenomena, otherwise known as UFOs, right? This is the new fancy word for UFOs. They call them UAP. He was a former member of the Air Force and had been working throughout the world, including Afghanistan, gathering intelligence. So huge accusations from him. He made these accusations on News Nation and on something called The Debrief. The Debrief reporters were actually a couple of New York Times reporters, award-winning, that had exposed some of the funding that was going to this research back in 2017. So a pretty decent set of journalists, a decent intel op, and a decent professor there. He's the leading expert on all of this right now in the world. Now, as we speak, he is preparing, Avi Loeb, the professor at Harvard University, is preparing I called it a dig. He called it a fishing expedition or a treasure hunt there off the coast of New Guinea, where he's going to be looking at an object buried at the bottom of the ocean floor. And it's his belief that we're going to find some materials or substance there that we don't recognize as having come from Earth. He's going to be there for a few weeks. We will have him back on the program. He's very forthcoming, as you can see, very honest about his discoveries. And if it's nothing, we'll find out it's nothing. And if it's something, well, wow, that was like the best $1.5 million ever spent, right? Anyway, it's great to have you here. One of you was asking, how do you prepare for the crisis? And I was kind of laughing because you know the sponsor of this program is always Legacy Precious Metals. They've been with me from the very beginning. And I'm teasing a little bit, but you know, people who really do worry, they often invest in gold because they see that as one of the ways to sort of maintain or hold value in the face of inflation, et cetera. If you're one of those people, go ahead. It has nothing to do with us doing the alien expo. But I just point out they are one of our sponsors. So 1-866-589-0560, legacypminvestments.com is the website. You can actually buy and sell gold and silver right there online, or you can buy it and put it in your bank vault or one of their vaults. Interesting stuff. I just am looking back at some of your comments again, which I so appreciate you guys weighing in on. Art had some very interesting things to say, and I can tell he's very read into this whole alien extraterrestrial situation, and one of you as well was making some interesting comments about a historian and political scientist who had talked about the importance of not getting, you know, sort of swollen heads, effectively, like not thinking that the sun revolves around us, and part of science perhaps is keeping that humility. And to me, that's why it does actually go hand in hand with religion, because part of religion means keeping a sense of humility always to you and understanding that this universe is so powerful because of God. And so I appreciated what Professor Loeb had to say about religion and science working simultaneously together. And I think that's an important thing to remember as we continue hearing about all of this stuff, including the one in Las Vegas over the weekend where some people thought they had seen something in their backyard. I mean, it's funny, right? But it's also incredibly interesting. And as the professor pointed out, we are so young and our knowledge of physics is so young. To think that when I was a kid, they were still teaching you that there were only 9 planets. Amazing, right? How far we've come. To think that I was one of the first people to get a microwave in my home. my children don't really ask, there's a reason I can't work the microwave that well. You know, I didn't have one growing up. And, you know, society changes and science advances us in so many new ways. And I think one of the most critical things we can do is keep that humility about us and an appreciation for the world and a wonder for the world and an open-mindedness, right? If we had been open-minded when we were confronted with March 2020, if Anthony Fauci had been open-minded when he was confronted with March 2020, he might have thought about more than just the virus itself. He would have thought about the economy. He would have thought about mental health. He would have thought about all the aspects of things that were going to go into making a decision. And it would have therefore have been a more informed decision. So I firmly believe as a journalist, and perhaps this is what I have in common with the scientists, because it's certainly not the lingo. I'm in, you know, way over my head talking about any of that. But it's an innate curiosity and a desire to find out the truth and a lack of ego when it comes to the truth, because we ought to just be able to admit what is what. So good to have you here. Again, I'm looking at comments. If you are listening on Apple iTunes, this is the live podcast where we all get together and there's an exchange of commentary and ideas. So you are welcome to join us. It's all free. The video version of the show is right here on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube right now and commenting, I'd love it if you could go over to Apple Podcasts and make sure that you follow the show, The Trish Regan Show on Apple Podcasts. And if you could, give it 5 stars and a nice review. That all helps. It helps all those algorithms, the technology, you know, that's out there working against or for us, I guess, depending on how you look at it. But anyway, great to have you here. Melanie, I appreciated your comments. Art, good stuff from you. Django, just joining again. Thank you so much. Hardcore do-it-yourself. Yes, the universe indeed is very, very magnificent and definitely hard to comprehend. Definitely. But you know what? We're just going to keep learning. We're going to have the professor back. He's off to his dig soon. And he mentioned he's going to be blogging a little bit on Medium. So you can look at that. And we will have him back. And we will find out just exactly what he saw on the bottom of the ocean floor. So stay tuned. Great to see you. We'll talk again tomorrow, everyone. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. We're going to put a whole bunch of clips that you can share, that you can share this show as well. You can sign up for my newsletter. It's all free at trishreganshow.com. And I will see you again tomorrow. Leave a comment below. I check them all. Promise.